think we're left.
Okay, when Rabbi Soloveitchik spoke about Parshat Chayesara, one of the things that he observed, and I'll use a little bit of his language and we'll also deviate a little bit from what he said, but one of the things that he observed is that when Sarah dies, Avram also seems to disappear. I mean, you could do the really quick math on this. Avraham is 100 years old when... Nice. Okay, good. So we'll see how we'll move. Avraham was 100 years old when Yitzhak was born, and he was 175 when he passed away, which means that there were 75 years where their lives overlap. So if I look at those 75 years, we're told that the age of 40, right, Yitzhak gets married. That leaves us another 35 years. So over those last 35 years, we don't hear anything about Avraham. A matter of fact, we could probably bring it back a little bit more. Sarah dies at 127. She was 90 years old, which means that we have actually another 3 years. That may have been more or less when Avraham sends this Eved on the mission, which means that the last, whatever, it's 35, 36, 37 years of Avraham's life, we don't hear anything about it. So obviously for some of you this is not so difficult, that like old Jews, Avraham probably retired, moved to Florida, and enjoyed the good life. I mean, that's obviously the right explanation. But it really is strange when you think about it, because again, this is Avraham Avinu. So what happened to Avraham Avinu? So that's one thing which bears keeping in mind. What happens in this week's parsha? There's really two things that happen, two primary things. I mean, you can tell me there's hundreds of things, but there's two primary things.
Avraham dies, not Avraham Avinu.
So the first thing is Sarah dies. Consequently, there needs to be a place to bury her. So you have the whole first part, which, by the way, honestly, it could have been edited down. This whole parsha could have been taken down to 30 psukim, and nobody would have noticed the difference. No one would have said, hold it, can't we have some more negotiations over here? And you really like this kind of stuff, you can just go to the shuk, you know, go back and forth, you know, take it for free. No, 400 shekel, and you know, and it doesn't seem all that exceptional. And again, we know the great irony of this, and that is that this is land that we had to buy. This is the first Kenyan in Eretz Yisrael, so we have to buy it. And because we bought it, no one ever is going to argue that Hebron is ours. So I guess that didn't work either. May as well just take it down to 30 psukim. So like, what are we talking about? But that's that really is the great irony. But that's the whole first part. It's negotiations. It's a show. We bought it. Avram bought it, and he wanted to make sure he paid money for it. This is anybody learned Gemara Kedushin. This is Kenyan. Kenyan stay Ephron. This is something which is a real Kenyan. This is where we learn the Kenyan from Kicha. Sorry, from stay Ephron. So this is again what it is to make a real accusation. So that's the whole first part. The second part. Avraham calls his trusty servant. So again, it never does call him Eliezer this week. It only calls him Eliezer in the past. So we work with what's called the theory of conservation of characters, that we assume previously we were told that Avraham's trusted servant is Eliezer. So today, Avraham's trusted servant is Eliezer. So he goes and sends this Eliezer to go and find a wife for Yitzchak. And that's really the most of the rest of the parsha, an extremely, extremely long Perek, which again really could have been cut down, edited much better. But apparently every single twist and turn is significant here as well. What is particularly interesting is a pasuk towards the very end, a pasuk which most people would understand, Freudians would get confused, and that is pasuk Samech Zayin. Vayivi'echa Yitzchak ha'ohala Sara Imo. He took his new wife Rivka to his mother's tent. Vayikachet Rivka, and he made her his wife. Vatihilo le'isha, she became his wife. Vayehaveha, and he loved her. Vayinochem Yitzchak achara Imo, and Yitzchak was comforted for his mother. Now this pasuk is very confusing. The reason the pasuk is confusing, because hold it, what in the world is is Rivka doing here? Is Rivka here as a wife? Is she a wife of Yitzchak or a replacement for his mother? Or, as I said today, that people who have certain perspectives say, oh, Yitzchak must have had mommy issues. Yitzchak had problems. Yitzchak, and he had an Oedipal complex. And you can go, and you, what? You're stuck in one of the stages. So you say, no, but somebody who says that is missing a couple of very important things. First thing, Yitzchak and Rivka, it's the first time in the Chumash where it describes the relationship of one of love. Never said that by any of the other relations. Excuse me? This is a source for Shiduchim. Oh, because okay. Well, they didn't communicate very well. That's next week. But they did not do wonderful in terms of communications. Yitzchak did love her. That is absolutely the case. But as I said, the communication, she keeps
like
secrets.
He loved her after he brought her into the tent. But he didn't see, like, he saw her, he loved her, then he married her.
Maybe that happened.
Her, at least, it shows that she was impressed with him right away. This crashing.
Yeah, she even fell off the camel. Right. Okay. So
like that candles thing, Sorry,
okay, I'll mention it. Yeah, that Rashi quotes that now. I'll mention that as well. But first thing it says is that he loves her. So again, pay attention. What we have here is a relationship where Yitzchak loves Rivka. The first time love is mentioned in the Chumash is when God talks about Yitzchak and says, the son that you love. That's the first time we have love. Second time love is over here. The next time love... Yitzchak and Esav and Rachel and Yaakov. So what we have over here, this is the source of love. It comes right over here. Now, Rashi wants to make sure we don't make a mistake on this pasuk. And Rashi, therefore, explains, Vayiveh ohala, v'rehi sara imo. She becomes like his mother Sarah. And that's the place he said, what are you talking about? Klomar, v'na'asit dugmat sara imo. Shakolzman shesara kayemet, hayener daluk mi erev Shabbat la erev Shabbat. That whenever Sarah, the whole time that Sarah was alive, there was a candle that remains lit. Ubracha mitzuyo beisa, and there was a blessing on her dough, as it were. The anan kashur al haohel, and there was a cloud connected to the ohel. Mishameta, as soon as she died, pasku. But when Rivka came in, they returned. What is Rashi saying here? See, let's pause and then we'll hopefully understand Rashi. Rabbi Soloveitchik's point, and going back to what he said, as soon as Sarah dies, Avraham is no longer Avraham. What do you mean Avraham is no longer Avraham? As soon as Sarah is dead, there's something about Avraham which has died as well. What does he mean by that? It means that we have Avot, Imahot, an Av, an Aim. We have Avram, we have Sarah. When there's no Sarah, there no longer is an Avraham. Which means, and these are his words, when Sarah dies, Avraham walks off the stage as well. What does he mean he walks off the stage? Again, we know he's still alive for a long time. According to the Midrashim, Yaakov and Esav sat on his knee. Yaakov and Esav are 15 years old when he dies. Avram tells him about the good old days, being thrown in the furnace, and all. Avram tells him all these stories. He's still alive. So I'm saying, if Avram Avinu's alive, so where is he? So Reb Soloveitchik's answer is, okay, so there's no longer Sarah, there's no longer Avram. Which means, I mean, his words would be something like, the covenantal community would require two individuals whose ontological expression, and so on. So I'll translate that into English, that there is a need to have an Avram and Sarah. Once Sarah is gone, we need to replace Avraham and Sarah. So we say, Dugmat Sarah Imo. That she goes into Sarah's tent. But did you hear the description of Sarah's tent? That's really what's remarkable. The description of Sarah's tent is what? What does it most closely remind us of? Better. I guess it doesn't remind us of anything. Better. Of the Mishkan. Of the Beit HaMikdash, with the Shtei HaLechem, or Lechem Aponim, with the menorah, with the cloud, the Shechina, which means he's describing Sarah's tent, as if it is a place of Kedusha. By the way, there's a Ramban which says in the introduction to Shemot, Shemot is the Sefer of Geula. And he says, but we're not really free until we return to the level of the Avot. And I always imagine that what the Ramban meant there, the level of the Avot, was exactly what we see in this Rashi. That the tent of the Imahot is like the place, is like the Mishkan. So therefore, how does Sefer Shemot end? Sefer Shemot ends when the Mishkan is really there, when the Mishkan is complete, when you have the menorah, when the cloud covers the whole thing, and you have the menorah, and you have the Mizbeach, and you have the Shulchan. So now we're back to the level that we were. Which level? Where did we get to? Again, all these years, where did we get to? We got back to Sarah's tent. So I'm saying, that's what's really remarkable. Somebody pointed out to me today that Shem Yishmuel says that. As I said, I imagine this, but I saw and saw the Shem Yishmuel says it, so he beat me to it. So he gets the credit. I don't know, I may have written it someplace and not quoted him, but I saw the Shem Yishmuel today. Do you realize that there's a very similar description by Avraham? Anan Kashur, do you remember that Rashi?
On Har Moriah.
So think about it a second. Right, do you remember why Rashi said this, what the whole background was? God says, you can go to the place that I'm going to tell you. Avraham starts to go. God doesn't. We don't find any further communication. It says on the third day, he lifts up his eyes and he sees the place from afar. So it's, what does he see? So Rashi says, and Rashi's quoting from Midrash. He says that he turns to, just in case, he took Eliezer and Yishmael with him. He turns to Yishmael and says, what do you see? I see. He says, I see a mountain. He turns to Eliezer, what do you see? He says, I see a mountain. He turns to Yitzhak, what do you see? He goes, I see a mountain with a cloud being hovering on top of the mountain. So he says to the other ones, and this is the part that people remember, Shvu po imachamor, which means stay here with the chomer, stay here with the physical, because if you can't see the ethereal, you can't see the spiritual, so you stay over here with the physical, and I and the boy will go up to the mountain, we'll bow down, and then we'll come back for you. Which, by the way, Rabbi Soloveitchik also spoke of. The people, there are times to have real religious growth, we need to separate from others. The people that bring us down, we need to separate. We need to climb the mountain. We need to see the mountain. We need to climb the mountain. But what is our responsibility afterwards? Is to go back down to where they were. And to reunite with the rest of society. So he stressed that part as well. But now if you think about it, Avram, in the most extraordinary moment of his life, where he has unbelievable kavana, he has unbelievable devotion, he's marching up this mountain with his son, and he's about to put him on a mizbeach. He's got the knife with him, he's got the fire with him, he's about to tie him down, to slit his neck, because God told him to do this. And at that moment, he has a revelation, he has an epiphany. At that moment, he's able to see this cloud, which is hovering on top of the mountain. But what's remarkable about this, what Rashi says on the other hand, and it was in Sarah's tent every single day, 24-7. That's unbelievable. Now, if you want, you can follow the type of machshav of the Maharal. The Maharal will say, therefore, men need outward-oriented expressions of holiness, and then they get to their ruchaniyut, while women can have a more internalized expression of holiness, which is really based on a number of different Kabbalistic passages in terms of male versus female, outward versus inward, and so on. But you look at these two Rashis and you realize that there really is something going on over here, which leads me back to perhaps a more fundamental question. What was the role of Sarah? Was Sarah's role fundamentally, and I don't want to belittle this, but was Sarah's role fundamentally to bake the chocolate chip cookies for Avraham's guests? That's what her role is. Avraham is the one who's the real spiritual hero, but Sarah's role is in order to bake the cookies. And by the way, I will say this with all humility, I bake better cookies than my wife does. She won't agree, but my kids will. Anyway. But because it goes back to a basic machloket, and that is, are chocolate chip cookies supposed to be hard or supposed to be soft?
Hard.
See, as I said, it's the basic machloket. So my wife is under the mistaken illusion that chocolate chip cookies aren't supposed to be hard. So I had to start making them just to, and by the way, there's a couple ways to make it soft. The easiest way to make it soft is simply to take it out of the oven a little bit earlier. The other way is, what I also do, take it out earlier, I also add in 4 times the amount of chocolate chips that the recipe calls for. And guess what? They're very soft, yeah. Is that machloket over now? This is a... when people come to our house, I don't do it all the time, people come to Sukkot, and they'll say to her, what great cookies, and she has to then say, under her breath, he made them. And so let's yeah. Do you like that question? You don't like that question.
I'm saying, you know, another Sarah also helped out. She helped out, like the woman, Avram, maybe brought the men clothes to here for the men. Sarah helped out with the women.
The very first time we meet them, and we have any awareness of a spiritual expression, Hanefesh Asher Asu B'choran, Avraham Agayir Et Anashim, V'Sarah Agayir Et Anashim. Which means, yeah, it's right there, black and white. And the truth is, we don't have to really work much harder than that. It's there. It says it. But there was somebody who made a mistake about this and did not think this was the case. Who was that? Correct. When Perek Tet Zayin, it says, V'sarai eshet Avram lo yodolo v'lo shivcha mitzrit u'shmar Hagar. Okay, first of all, the relationship. The relationship is Sarah has a shivcha. The shivcha is a mitzrit and Hagar. Now, Chazal tell us a whole other story. Not that it contradicts, but it certainly fills in and goes against your first reading. What does Chazal say about Hagar?
She was a princess.
There's even a Targum Yonatan, right, who you know is not really Targum Yonatan, yes? There's even a Targum Yonatan that says that Hagar was the daughter of Paro, the granddaughter of Nimrod. And it says that Eliezer was the son of Nimrod. So, which is great. Nimrod tries to kill Avram, and he gets him back by being Makar of his whole family. No, right, it doesn't get better than that. So it says, no, so it also, it makes it very interesting in terms of Eliezer's physical prowess and his strength, his abilities, and so on, and even the Midrash and the Agadot that we considered last week. Okay, so the question, though, is, why does Chazal imagine that she was an Egyptian princess? Okay, I have a very simple explanation for this. And this I didn't see anybody say, but I have a very, very simple explanation. But give me a second. If you're Avraham and you don't have a child, it causes a problem on two levels. On one level, men have egos and need this, have this, I don't know, you want to call it an anthropological need to create some kind of mini-me or some kind of offspring or whatever you will. But Avram has another problem, and that is that Avram has begun a movement. And what's going to happen with his entire movement if he's not there? Well, no one else is going to be there in order to take over. Which, by the way, anyway, is a very big question. So what did happen to the Nefesh Asher Asu B'Charan? And if you look at the Rambam, it says there are thousands or tens of thousands of them. What happened? I once heard that in the early years of Torah Vadas, there was a very important Rosh Hashiva, I'm not going to give any names now, a very important Rosh Hashiva, and he gave an incredible, complex, brisker type shir. And then afterwards, there was another Rosh Hashiva, another Rosh Hashiva gave a blot shir. And everybody started to complain. So the Mashkiach gave a shmuz, and he said that, no, what happened to the Nefesh Asher Asu B'Charan? He says that Avram gave a brisk shir, and Yitzchak gave a blot shir, so they all left. They all went to different yeshivas. So he said, you could decide. And he goes, and we never heard from them again. So he goes, you could decide if you want to be like the Nefesh Asher B'Charan, or you want to stay and hear the shir from the new yeshiva. That was...
That's exactly. Nefesh Asher B'Charan, they all left.
I think there's another issue. I think at the point that Avraham has a bris milah, and there is a Yitzchak, I think the flip side, meaning that's the irony. You need a Yitzchak because somebody to take care of this whole nation, but once you have a Yitzchak, apparently you no longer need this whole nation because it's going to be Yitzchak Yezer.
I'm saying the whole godless of Avraham was he's retired.
And they're all gone. They're in Knesset today. I don't know what to tell you. They're all gone.
It does take away a little bit from this whole, I mean, that's his whole thing, though. He's the gear of the gear. He's
whatever you want. Are they here still? What do you want me to do? I'll lie to you if you want. Just say it.
Something.
No, but I'm saying it's interesting. You never hear. 70 people go down to Egypt. We never hear from them again. So he said, one shot is because Yitzchak gave a blotch here. Nope. He didn't say any brisket Torah, so they all left. What's that? Is that any worse than any other explanation you've ever heard? You never even thought about the problem until now. As I said, according to the Rambam, it's really exaggerated, because the Rambam says there were tens of thousands of people who were affected. Maybe they built cities, maybe there's something. I don't know what else to say. Listen, there are a lot of monotheists around in the world today. Anyway, let's get back to Hagar. According to this midrash, that Hagar is an Egyptian princess, so what Sarah does is very, very brave. I asked this question to my students in Bar Ilan today. I actually have one class, which is a mixed class. I have around 90 people in the room, and I told all the men to be quiet. That if they're smart, don't say a thing, and let the women answer the question. I said, what kind of woman will you invite into your husband's bed? And as I said, the men all had, it was a really easy question for them. But the woman gave an interesting answer. Essentially, somebody as dumb and as ugly and as, you know, dull as can possibly be. Why? Because they're afraid of competition. Interesting that some of the men wouldn't listen to me, and they volunteered anyway, hot, and like go on and all, and got a bunch of like nasty looks from everyone else in the room. But if she's a princess, then just think about what this means. But by the way, as an aside, we actually are aware of marriage contracts in ancient Mesopotamia. We don't have Avram and Sarah's marriage contract, but we do have from the same time, more or less, when they got married, and it does deal with issues of infertility, or issues generally of taking a second wife. So there were various possibilities. One is that you cannot take another wife whatsoever. That was very rare. The thing that would normally happen is the more money that was in dowry, which means the wealthier family that the wife came from, the more control she would have on who this other woman would be. If there was a very low amount of money being passed, then the husband could just take another wife, whoever he wants. But if a lot of money was there, then she gets to decide, and it would only be somebody who's her slave. And by the way, when you keep that in mind, the pasuk over here is fascinating. And it's attention that you really need to pay attention all the way through with Hagar. What is the status of Hagar? It says, "V'sarai eshet Avram lo yolada lo, v'lo shivcha mitzrit." So she's a shivcha. "V'tomer sarai el Avram, hinei atzarani Hashem miledet, bo na el shivchati." So what is it? No, my shivcha. Okay, so that puts Sarah, makes you happier, on a much higher social strata. But Yishma Avram l'kol Sarai, and Avram listened to what Sarai said. But Tikach Sarai eshet Avram et Hagar mitzrit shivchata miketz eser shanim l'shevet Avram ba'eretz Kanan. But titain otah la'Avraham isha, her husband, lo le'isha, as a wife. So what is she? Is she a wife, or is she a servant? V'yavo el Hagar v'tahar. He had relations with Hagar. She got pregnant. V'tera ki harata. And once she saw that she was pregnant, vatekal gvirta be'ineha, that Sarah sunk in her appraisal. The Midrash says that she would then go around telling people, Sarah is not what she seems to be. On the outside, she looks like she's a tzedeket. I don't know how a tzedeket dresses on the outside. I don't know, you can decide. Does it mean she wore sheitel? Does she wear... Okay, she looked like a tzedekah. He goes, but on the inside, she's not what she makes believe. On the inside, she's obviously not holy, because look at all the years that she spent with Avraham and nothing, and Avraham spent one night with me and I got pregnant. So she used her fertility as evidence of her righteousness. I mean, if that's the case, there are many, many righteous people in certain places that we could... you know, we should evaluate them for their righteousness. But what's interesting about this is that Hagar does make this argument. She knows that Avram is holy, but it's in her interest to argue that Sarah is nothing. But now, think a second that she was really born as the daughter of Paro. Again, according to that line in the Midrash, what happens? That after the whole episode in English, Paro, in Egypt, Paro turns to his daughter and says, "You're better off being number two in Sarah's house than being number one over here," and she follows. But deep down inside, what does Hagar know? That she was meant to be queen. That's what she knows deep down inside. It also then makes the choice of Hagar as the surrogate, not surrogate mother, but as the surrogate wife for Avraham, a far gutsier choice, because she's not bringing in some slave, she's bringing in somebody who's potentially the queen of Egypt into the bedroom. And again, that completely changes the texture of the story. Now, but now, I just want to make sure you get this, because it's just, it's very easy to miss. And the reason I say it's very easy to miss, because I've never saw anybody say it. Why did Chazal insist that she was this princess of Egypt? It's very simple. Very happy. Better than that. Better than that. When Avraham goes down to Egypt, why does he go down? He goes down because there is a famine. When he goes there, there's a threat against the male, Avraham, and they take the female. According to the Ramban, everything that takes place is a precursor, or in English, Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim, for what's going to happen in the exile in Egypt. So there's a threat against the males, kill the males, keep the women. There's a famine, that's why they end up going down. There, once the outrage takes place, here Sarah's taken, there the entire slavery, what happens? They get struck with plagues, which it says in the Chumash over here in Bereshit. The palace gets struck with plagues, and then what happens? Avram leaves with great wealth. He goes, Berechush Gadol. So therefore, in a sense, every single element, what happens when Avram goes down to Egypt, gets repeated when the whole Jewish people go down to Egypt. So now I just have to ask you a very simple question. Does Bat Paro have anything to do with the story when the Jews leave Egypt? So what, of course, is the answer?
Yes.
Yes. So now you see that Chazal, again, this is the way I'm reading it, that Chazal discern that there is some kind of a parallel, and Bat Paro actually has a pretty prominent role, and that's not a midrash, that's black and white in the Chumash, that Bat Paro, so they start looking, okay, now how can we find Bat Paro in this story? So we'll look what they did. They said, oh yeah, we have Bat Paro in the story. Who's that? Hagar Hamitzrit is Bat Paro. Now, what are you going to tell me? But it didn't work out the same way. It worked out differently, which is wonderful, that even in situations of Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, there's still free choice. Still the individual has the ability of making the decision of what they want to make. Hagar messes up. And why does Hagar mess up? Because she rebels against Sarah. And she makes this determination that Sarah really doesn't have the holiness. The only one that really has the holiness is Avraham. And therefore, Sarah is completely replaceable. As I said, the Chumash doesn't seem to agree. Incidentally, later on, when Sarah again, this is going to come back again, meaning she runs away, she gets chased away, the Malach says, submit, you are secondary. Later on, after she has the child, again, Avraham is going to be encouraged by his wife, you have to get, and it's very hard for Avraham. And what does God say? Listen to Avram. Meaning, what's the context where God says, listen to Avram? Listen to Sarah. Specifically in the context over here when dealing with Hagar and dealing with Ishmael. This is exactly the issue. And by the way, it's a little bit better than that. It says that Ishmael started to laugh. Right? He tzchok. Which, by the way, why should that bother anybody? Everything about Yitzchak's birth is all about tzchok. Yitzchak, tzachaka. Everybody laughs about Yitzchak. So why the laughter of Yishmael is taken as this terrible thing? And I know what Rashi says over there, in case you're going to remind me. Rashi says that tzchok over here, I mean, take your pick, Gilei Raich, Shvichadam, Vodazara, all of them rolled into one, is that's terrible. Sforno has a very interesting comment. The Sforno's comment is really connected with Rashi in the beginning of Toldot. The beginning of Toldot, it says, "Ve'ela Toldot Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram lidi Yitzchak." So, what does Rashi notice? It's redundant. It should have said "Ve'ela Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham," or "Ela Toldot Yitzchak Avram lidi Yitzchak." You don't need both. "Ela Toldot Yitzchak ben Avram lidi Yitzchak." So, what does Rashi say over here? Why does it say it both? He says, "Huskak lama Avram lidi Yitzchak l'fi shahoyu," and I love this term. Leitzonei Hador. What does Leitzonei Hador mean? The stand-up comedians. Late-night television hosts. Right? That's what it is. Leitzonei Hador. The Leitzonei Hador said, Omri me avi melech mit abrasara. That who was the one who actually fathered Yitzchak? It was Avimelech. and say in this knowing way, look at all the years that Sarah was with Avram, absolutely nothing, and then she spends, you know, one night with Amimelech, and look what happens. So when it says, the Sforno points out here, that Ishmael started to laugh when Yitzchak was born. So what was he saying over? And by the way, this goes to the intelligence of Ishmael. What was he saying? What was the joke that he was saying? He was telling over the joke from the Litzani Ador. So what was he saying? Oh, look at this. Avram can't have children all these years. Sarah was Avram. He couldn't have a child. And so it must be from Avimelech. Now, why in this particular case for Yishmael to say this may have been somewhat self-defeating. Right, which is part of the problem of stupidity. But why would he say such a thing? He say, because he is totally focused on one point. And that was to question the legitimacy of Yitzchak and how in the world... So that he can be the heir. That he can be the one to inherit. Although, as I said, the really funny thing is here is that at the same time that he's undermining Yitzchak, he's actually undermining himself. If Avram can't have children, which means the reality is if an 86-year-old man or a 7-year-old man can have a child, so then somebody who's 99 or 100 can also have a child. I mean, that's a little more reasonable to say, or a 90-year-old woman who's never had a child, that suddenly she has a child. I mean, or I'll say it the other way around. If God could arrange for a 90-year-old woman can have a child, the fact that Avram may have been a father is not the biggest miracle that just now took place. But I'm saying that the joke that he's saying, the late sonus that he's saying over here, is in reality self-defeating, but it goes back to the same point. It is, again, something he inherits from his mother. His mother tries to undermine Sarah's status. He tries to undermine the status of Yitzchak, and this goes together. Now, how does Yitzchak deal with all this? Psukim do say something. Only problem is we don't pay attention when the Psukim speak to us. The Psukim actually say something which is fascinating. In towards the end of Perikov Dalet, so let's get back and catch up to Perikov Dalet, what we are up to. Eliezer, or Eved Avraham, goes off looking for a mail order bride, right? Let me go try to find somebody. He finds this woman. He actually gives a test. The test is fascinating. What's the test? The test is who will be able to do this chesed. Why would somebody who wants to bring a woman back to Avram's tent do a test of chesed? Is that a hard question now to ask? Because, will you be able to handle the guests? Will you be able to break the cookies, soft chocolate chip cookies? Will you be able to live up to the standards of Sarah? I can actually say this a little differently. But I'm going to contradict everything I say now a little bit later, but I'm going to say it anyway. The Kabbalistic way of setting this up is to say that essentially Avraham was a man of chesed, but Sarah was a woman of din. Sarah is din. Avraham brings everybody home, and Sarah says, get out. Right? He's bringing in, she's chasing out. Chesed and din. Yitzchak is midah din, so therefore, if Yitzchak is din, so what do you need? What's the proper? You need somebody who's chesed. Yaakov is what? He's Teferet. What's Teferet? A combination of Chesed and Din. And that's why Yaakov needs two wives. Okay? So, which is actually the Leshem does make this statement. And explains the nature of the two wives as well. But it really has to do with this combination of Chesed and Gevura, which creates the Teferet of Yaakov. Now, and by the way, the most remarkable statement about this is the statement of the Ran, which, no, you guys are all worried about women being rabbis and whatever, and women putting on tefillin and all this. The Ran says something which is so much more radical. The Ran says as follows. He goes, why when he goes looking for a wife, he doesn't, one second, you never heard about people going shiduchim? They have lists, you know, of what you need, you know, and, right? Again, how she's going to cover their hair, what kind of tablecloth she, I mean, there are important questions before you get married that need to be clarified. You can't just go and marry anybody. If you don't know this, you guys are in trouble. But why doesn't he check if she went to Beis Yaakov? No, okay, I'll say it differently. Why doesn't he check her belief in monotheism? Why doesn't he check her emunah? Why is the test in terms of her midos? So the Ran says, because it's easy to change belief, but changing characteristics is much more difficult. I would love for the rabbi, you know, to answer this question. Somebody says, there's two different shidduchim which are offered. One is a girl with great midos, but she's an atheist. And the other one, she went to the best schools and she knows all the Rambans on the Chumash, but she doesn't have very good midos. Which one should my son marry? So I'm waiting for the person to get up. Well, the Ran paskins that it's easy to change emuna, but it's very difficult to change characteristics. So I'm saying, that's far more interesting than... As I said, don't expect anybody to be saying this so soon. So now, what I just now set up was Avraham, Chesed, Yitzchak, Din, and so on. But I also asked how Yitzchak treated Hagar, or how Yitzchak treated Yishmael. And I was told the Chumash doesn't say anything. Well, the Chumash may say something, and that's... Sometimes you need to know how to read between the lines, or sometimes even what the lines themselves says. When Rivka comes together with Eliezer Eved Avram, so in Perikov Dalet Pasuk Samech Bet, it says, the Yitzchak ba, and Yitzchak came, mivo, from where? Say it again, I can't hear you. From Be'er Lachai Ro'i. So Yitzchak came from visiting a place called Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Now, what is Be'er Lachai Ro'i? You could say it. It's the well where Hagar had her religious experience. That's where she built the first mosque afterwards, the first Muslim holy place. No, I'm kidding. That's where she has her revelation. By the way, Rashi here points out, why was Yitzchak going there? To? What does Rashi say? Shahalach lahavi Hagar laAvraham. So do you realize how beautiful this is? Avraham is busy trying to send someone to bring a wife for Yitzchak, and Yitzchak is trying to go bring a wife for Avraham. V'yechul shneim yachdav. I know there are people who say, oh, after the Akedah they never spoke again. Well, they never spoke before the Akedah either. there's no conversation before. The only time they ever speak is on the way to the Akedah. They never speak before, they never speak after. But you know what? V'yechul shneim yachdav. 100%. The two of them are of one mind, one heart, and each one cares and is taking care of the other one. And what's interesting is that, again, how many sons, after their mother dies, will say, well, my father's all alone, I better bring somebody, you know, that he needs companionship. And how many would feel, no one can replace my mother. Well, the pasuk says, two psukim later, that Rivka, no, it's not that Rivka, Sarah's two different people. She's this private woman who happens to be Avram's wife, but she's also this leader of this people. Rivka now is going to become the new leader of the people. She's replacing Sarah, but Avram's still alone. That Rivka came here and replaced Sarah doesn't help Avram at all. So what is Yitzchak doing? He's going to look. But is this a one-time visit? I'm going to put you on the spot again. Is this a one-time visit that Yitzchak happens to go...
No.
You're sure? Yeah. You see me turning, but you're sure, yeah? Positive. So in Perikuf Hey, Pasuk Chet, it says, Vayigva Vayamat Avraham Beseva Tova Zokain Visavea Vyasef El Amav Vikbruto Yitzchak Vishmoel Beno. What does Rashi learn from the fact that it's Yitzchak and Yishmael in that sequence? So Rashi learns that that Yishmael was Chozer B'tshuva. And why was Yishmael Chozer B'tshuva? Who encouraged him? Who convinced him? Who showed him the codes? So a couple of psukim later, Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, V'yihi acharei mot Avraham, v'yivarech Elokim et Yitzchak b'no, v'yeshev Yitzchak im be'er l'chai ro'i. The Yitzchak goes to move, and he goes to live by be'er l'chai ro'i. I think that the geography over here, you know, sometimes you learn, like you make a diuk, it's the geography. Over here, the whole thing is geography. The fact that Yitzchak chooses to go there, to pray there, to be involved there, the fact that he goes to live there, tells us, again, on the simplest level, Yitzchak feels this connection with Be'er Lachai Ro'i. The only other thing we know about it is that it's someplace connected to Hagar. Rashi did the same math and says, oh, it must be that he's bringing Hagar back. But it's more than that. Why is it more than that? apparently that Hagar feels threatened by Sarah. So what does she do? She diminishes the value of Sarah. She says Sarah's a nothing. Sarah is fake. Sarah, you know, meaningless, implying that she is great. Who's the second one who does that? Yishmael does the exact same thing. Yitzchak is meaningless. Yitzchak is not, he's not even, he's illegitimate, and so on and so forth. Yitzchak goes back to Hagar and brings her back to his father, thereby showing her respect, and if you want to go even further, showing respect not just to Hagar as an individual, showing respect to Hagar, to her religious experience, that God spoke to her, saying that she's an important person, and brings her back to be Avraham's companion. When Yishmael understands that Yitzchak was able to do, and again, that does take greatness. When Yishmael understands what it is that Yitzchak did, Yishmael melts. Yishmael melts, and therefore he says, you know what, you really are the greater man than I am. And he backs off, and again, it comes down to a very simple point. It's that Yitzchak respects Hagar, and that allows, that facilitates Yishmael to now to respect Yitzchak, and that's what brings Yitzchak close. Am I making all of this up? Of course I'm making all of this up. But the one thing you have to admit is that Chazal say all of this, they just don't connect it geographically with the place. And they don't give the credit to Yitzchak. What I'm trying to show is, yes, miraculously, well, by the way, that credit they do give to Yitzchak. He does bring back Hagar. Rashi, that Chazal does say. So the only thing that I'm doing is saying, okay, so what are the implications of him bringing back Hagar, and how did this impact Yishmael? Some arguing that that would have made even this tough Yishmael melt, and therefore what does Yishmael do? So at this point, when it comes to the funeral, the exact point that he argued about, oh, Yitzchak is not even legitimate, he says, Yitzchak, you go first, Yitzchak, you're primary, and I recognize my place, and really, Sarah really was a great woman, and she raised a son like you, but it all comes to one little point. You give somebody respect, you give somebody validity, and at that point, they're able to accept you as well. And that's exactly what I think Yitzchak does. I also think that this may explain something else. I know that you're all going to know the answer to this question, even if it's not right. Why does Avraham not want Yitzchak to go on his own date? No, by the way, don't get me wrong. And then I have not been on a date in a long time, so I don't know so much about this. It could be all of you know far more than I do. And there could be a business opportunity over here. Right? Shidduch by proxy. You know, send Eved Avram on the date for you. He can even bring her back for you. Whole thing. You just, you know, come in from the field and let's make the wedding. Okay? No one's going for this. Okay. Why not send Yitzchak himself? What's the answer? Go, tell me the answer. Why can't he live? Right. And who says that? Chazal say that. Excellent. Is it relevant? He says Yitzchak is a korban. Korban Ola, and he can't leave. There's maybe one problem with that. First of all, Chazal say it. Chazal say that, but they don't say it here. Chazal say it later on when there's a famine in the land and Yitzchak goes down south and he's about to leave and go towards Egypt. How does he travel? He goes towards Eretz Plishtim. Is that a way to leave Israel? Of course it is. It's actually the way they're supposed to come into Israel, Derech Eretz Plishtim. Why come Derech Eretz Plishtim? Because you're on the coast the whole time, you're near the water. Actually, geographically, again, it's much, much shorter. You're near the water, it's a better way to travel. Yitzchak starts to go in that direction, and God comes to him and says, no, you don't go. There, Chazal say, oh, Yitzchak can't go. Why can't he go? Because he's a korban olah. Where can't he go? He can't go to Egypt. You know what's really interesting? Chazal don't say it over here. Okay, maybe they had a bad day, they forgot to say it, they meant to say it, they wanted to say it, they were almost said it, they were going to say it, but they don't say it over here. Why is it that Chazal say it over there and they don't say it over here? So you can say, okay, low plug, or you can make anything up that you want, but I'm still troubled by that. There are Rifarshim who say it here, the Al-Sheikh and others, that say, oh, Yitzchak can't go to Chutz Eretz because he's a Korban Tum. Now, there's only one problem with that. The one problem is that, okay, there's two problems. One is don't say it, but I already said that. There's one other problem. What's the other problem? The other problem is that by the Brit Ben Epitarium, when God says, I'm going to give you the land, where is it? From where to where?
It's included in the part
that he's allowed to go to. Where can't he go? He can't go past Naar Mitzrayim. So where can't he go? He can't go to Egypt. Which means, I don't think Chazal, you know, had a bad day here. They know exactly what they're saying. They're fitting this into the greater borders of Eretz Yisrael. Which means, Why can't Yitzchak go down to Egypt? Because that's going outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's past Nahar Mitzrayim. Why can't he go back to Avram's hometown, which admittedly I have no idea where it is either? You can look in the Ramban, Rash, whatever, the whole discussion where he lived. But it seems to me that if you say that it's till Nahar HaGadol, Nahar Prat, it seems to me that he can go pretty far north and be okay. So that's why Chazal don't say it. So I'm going to ask all over again. So why doesn't Avram tell Yitzchak go find her? No, Yitzchak can't go. Under no condition can he go. I think it's that Yitzchak, the personality, the one who's trying to make the family come together. And think about it now. I just now gave you a whole insight on how Yitzchak gets along with Esav. Why does he get along with Esav? Because he grew up in a family that was broken. He grew up in a family that, because of him, Yishmael was chased out of the house. He grew up in a family that was fractured. And what does he then do when he gets older? He brings the family back together. When he has a kid like Yishmael, like Esav, and let's be honest, he has two kids. Do you really think that Yitzchak was confused? One of them is just like Avraham, Yoshev Elohim. The other one is just like, say it? No, just like Nimrod. Sayid, right? Who else was a hunter, a great hunter in front of God? Who was the great hunter till now? It was Nimrod. So look at this joke. Yitzchak has a son who's like Nimrod and his son like Avram. Okay, this is going to be hard for me to figure out which is the good guy and which is the bad guy. What's the answer? Of course Yaakov's the good guy. So now tell me, so why does Yitzchak say to Esav, hit the road? No, just enough. Go. Because Yitzchak is somebody who doesn't want the family to break up. Yitzchak is somebody who brings Hagar back. Yitzchak is somebody who brings Yishmael back. And Yitzchak is somebody who's not going to let go, even of Esav. So now I'll ask again. So why is it that Avram says that Yitzchak can't go to his own family? Because he knows Yitzchak. Yitzchak is going to try to make friends with him. Yitzchak is going to try to heal to, what's the term, to the bridges. What's the word to...
Build the bridges.
To, what do you do to the bridges?
Mend,
right? Not blow up the bridge, right? To mend. He's the one who's going to try to bring everybody together. Now, the problem with this is Avram knows exactly who these people are. This is his family that threw him into a furnace. This is a family. This is not the time to go in, or the place, or the people. I mean, even when Yaakov, who's a little slyer than Yitzchak, even when he goes there, he's in way over his head with Lavan. Avram knows who these people are. He goes, no, you're not going. Because Yitzchak is so conciliatory, because Yitzchak wants to make peace, because Yitzchak is such a nice person, which actually, that's what I said, I'm going to contradict myself. It doesn't sound, according to what I'm saying, that Yitzchak is so much Midat Hadin. It sounds very much that he's his father's son. It sounds very much that he's his father's son, and Yitzchak does all that he can do to bring people together because he doesn't want families to be broken apart. So I think, again, if you look at the psukim over here, we can have a great deal of insight into Yitzchak's personality on the one hand, into how he behaves, interacts with his half-brother, with his son, with his family, and why Avram says under no condition can he go back to his family, because he knows his family and he does not trust them at all. Now,